válido de lunes a jueves. You
the Safari Park. You're killing me, Larry.
Larry, fucking Larry.
Larry from That Larry Show.
For men with balls.
Take off your pants.
Larry, get into bed now.
Larry.
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 Do you love the sounds of travel? A gear-shifting truck out of the interstate? The thrumming of diesels of a ship heading for deep water. By the whine of turbines as the landing gear leave the tarmac and they become airborne. Or how about this one, those steel wheels clacking in syncopation over the rails? Must be great to take an extended train trip, like the 20th century from New York to Chicago, the one where Newman and Redford took on the gangster played by Robert Shaw in The Sting. Or the Orient Express, where 007 took on the impossibly sexy Russian spy chick, Tatiana Romanova. I've logged thousands and thousands of miles on trains, but never really on the ones I wanted to ride. New York subways technically are trains, and they just suck. For a number of years, I rode the Long Island Railroad from my home at the beach to Manhattan. That got old pretty fast. Same view out the window. In urban areas, anywhere near the tracks is the wrong side of the tracks. Rusting cars, overflowing dumpsters, razor wire and graffiti. On board, same faces and the same suits and trench coats and briefcases. Most expressions were of, well, at least on the ride home, of relief that they survived another day at the office. What awaited them at home? A candlelit dinner with a sexy wife? Or screaming kids and a barking dog and a fresh stack of bills on the kitchen table. Maybe solitude, crushing silence, and a hungry man dinner for one in front of a flickering television. There were often four guys who would sit opposite one another on the seats near the doors. They'd play cards using their briefcases as tables. Everyone's face had the pallor that overhead fluorescent lights could provide. There was a bar car, but it was nothing like the ones in movies. It was just a steel counter with a guy behind it selling overpriced cans of somewhat warm domestic beer. I wanted a train paneled in real wood, red velvet curtains on the windows, barmen and waiters in starched shirts and bow ties popping corks on vintage wines, thick linens on spacious tables and stunning women. All around. Did those trains ever exist? Or was that just Hollywood chicanery? Back then I lived alone, but never resorted to nuking robot shit for dinner. Often I'd dine with friends in the city who were also co-workers and then head for the train. By the time I got home, I was practically asleep. That kept isolation at bay. But the solitude never bugged me that much. In the long days of summer, I'd often catch my dinner. There was a jetty right there, and I knew where there was a hole off it, on the east side, about 15 yards from the end. I kept frozen squid in the freezer. I'd grab a rod, bait up, drop it in that hole, and in seconds, I'd have a sea bass or fluke hooked. It was almost too easy. That hole always delivered fish. I'd fillet it, sauté it, pluck some tomatoes off the vine on the patio, add them to the romaine in the fridge, and presto, a gourmet meal, impossibly fresh, and nearly at no cost. From that beach, if it was clear, you could see the World Trade Towers spiking above Lower Manhattan. I had clients in those buildings, spent a lot of time in them. The scale of them was hard to imagine. The elevators were cavernous. They'd easily hold 50 people or more. They were fast as hell, and as they rose, the air currents would jiggle them from side to side. It was a little unnerving. As I stared at those towers from my beach house, I used to feel tremendous satisfaction. It was so great to be on the sand looking back at all that glass and concrete instead of the other way around. I never imagined they'd someday be turned to rubble. Never imagined I'd someday view that horror show on a TV from my house in Los Angeles with my wife and baby daughter. Maybe that's what I should call this episode. You never imagine. It's crazy how life sneaks up on you. How you find yourself in a new place surrounded by new people who, just a few years earlier, were unknown to you. One had yet to be conceived. And all of a sudden, they become the center of your world. That baby daughter grew up with alarming speed. Went to college in Santa Barbara. Dozens of times I dropped her at the train station in Chatsworth, California. Chatsworth is tucked into the northwest corner of the San Fernando Valley. Long before I got to L.A., it was known for horses and sprawling ranches. Lucy and Desi had a spread up there. By the time I arrived, there were still a few stores with hitching rails in front with real-life horses tied to them. It was like the Old West, with concrete and cars. Chatsworth first became newsworthy thanks to the illustrious Charles Manson. He and his crew of psychos lived at an adjacent old movie ranch. He was captured there, hiding under a sink. He was a very tiny and limber psycho, and had folded himself up in that space with the cockroaches. He might not have been captured, but some of his hippie long hair was showing through the closed door, and that's how some cops spotted him. Once the Manson attention wore off, Chatsworth became famous for another reason. Porn. Most porn movies were shot, edited, and distributed from Chatsworth. The digital age changed that, I guess. Then in 2008, Chatsworth occupied national headlines for a spectacular train wreck that killed 30. More on that in a bit. For 4 years, I frequented Chatsworth when taking my daughter to that train, where she would ride north a couple of hours to college. The double-decker is called the surf liner because for a lot of the journey it hugs the shore and can deliver spectacular views of the Pacific. In early winter, you'll see pods of whales as they migrate. Whenever I took her to the station, time was tight, but getting her there on time was really unnecessary because the trains were invariably late. Not a minute, or two, or five, or even 10. No, it was often 30, 45 minutes late. This I could not understand. When I rode the Long Island Railroad, punctuality was extraordinary. If you arrived at, say, 7:07 for the 7:06 train, you were going to see taillights, which is how it should be. But not in California. It didn't take me long to discover why the schedules were meaningless. One day, as the 9 a.m. train pulled in at 9:17, it stopped, the doors opened. My daughter boarded along with some others. Then we heard the word, "Wait!" shrieked from the parking lot. A woman was unloading a wheeled bag from her car. Incredibly, the conductor held the train. Then she walked. Didn't trot, didn't run, just walked about 200 yards to the train. As she reached the door, she did a head slap.
"Oh my God, I forgot my purse!"
and walked back to her car, and the fucking conductor continued to hold that train until she returned with her purse. And no, she was not hot-looking. Total delay was 4, maybe 5 minutes. Add a similar needless delay at each stop along the way, and that's how you get trains running a half hour, 45 minutes, even an hour late. Hundreds, maybe thousands of people inconvenienced for the convenience of a few rude and ignorant assholes. That's how this state works. That's the mindset, the tyranny of the stupid, indolent, and rude. If you think that's an exaggeration, think about this. The Chatsworth train wreck in 2008 killed 30 people. It was caused by one selfish, incompetent, and negligent asshole named Robert Sanchez. It was proven beyond a shadow of a doubt that he failed to see a stop signal and drove the train into a head-on collision because he had something more important to do than drive the train. 47-year-old Sanchez was texting some train buff, an unnamed 16-year-old train buff. Few people know Sanchez's name, but everyone knows Charles Manson's name. Yet Manson, who hung out footsteps from that train wreck, was never convicted of killing anyone. He did a life term and died in jail because he was suspected of masterminding several murders. For those few who might recall the Chatsworth train wreck, they probably remember it as an accident. But was it? The entire disaster was a case study in the fuckery of organizations, bureaucracies, and what their denizens will do and say to cover their asses and protect their organizations. Oh, and of course, the income they provide. While operating the train that day, Sanchez sent over 50 text messages. He also used his phone to order a roast beef sandwich. This all occurred while he was driving a 250,000-pound locomotive pulling 3 cars containing 222 passengers. There were records of Sanchez having been warned by his supervisors not once but twice to stop using the cell phone. Of course, few knew this the day of the crash. The media was screaming for answers. And one short day afterwards, Metrolink Railroad spokeswoman Denise Terrell issued a statement saying, quote, "We don't know how the error happened, but we believe it was our engineer who failed to stop at the signal," unquote. Wow, imagine that. Straight up honesty. Then one Don Knabe, who gives a shit, he was the L.A. County supervisor at the time. Yes, that's a politician who also just happened to be a board member of the Metrolink Railroad. He issued his own statement disputing the one from Denise Terrell. According to Wikipedia, Don Knabe said it was premature to blame the engineer, speculating that, quote, "There could always be technical malfunction where there was a green light both ways," unquote. Really? How would a politician know that? And maybe he played with toy trains in his basement. Anyway, Denise Terrell quit her job 2 days after Metrolink called her statement premature and inappropriate. Though her honesty earned her accolades from some, she was still out of a job. Even the LA Times said it was, quote, "unclear of the concept of how the truth can somehow be premature. The truth is the truth," unquote. Soon the NTSB got involved and proved indisputably the engineer was at fault. They established that Sanchez was texting constantly while driving the train just prior to the accident. He had allowed an unnamed train enthusiast to sit at the controls in the cab several days before the crash. He was planning to let him run the train between 4 stations on the evening of the crash. A text from Sanchez said,
"I'm going to do all the radio talking, you're going to run the locomotive, and I'm going to tell you how to do it."
Sanchez's final text to the enthusiast was exactly 22 seconds before impact. Imagine the expression on his stupid fucking face when he looked up from his phone to see another train approaching at over 40 miles an hour. A first responder described the wreck as beyond human description. Of course, Sanchez was dead. But why wasn't he reviled, despised, vilified? Besides the 30 dead, 135 were hospitalized, many with injuries that will never heal. When some fiend grabs a weapon, shoots up a school or a mall or a nightclub, we know his name. Nicholas Cruz, Omar Mateen, Adam Lanza, Audrey Hale. We know those names, don't we? Was Sanchez all that different from them? Are those he killed with a train any less dead than those killed by bullets? It could be argued that crazed shooters are categorically insane. Robert Sanchez was a negligent scumbag who thought he was above the rules. Doesn't that make him lower than some mad dog killer? Well, his union doesn't feel that way. Incredibly, on their website is a nice obituary of him with a picture of him smiling and holding a dog. Such a nice man. Here's what his union, the BLET, that's the Brotherhood of Engineers and Trainmen, with 57,000 members, wow. Here's what they have to say about Sanchez.
Locomotive engineer Eddie Sanchez, 47, was one of 30 people killed when his Metrolink commuter train collided head-on with a Union Pacific freight train in Chatsworth, California.
One of? They failed to mention he was driving the fucking train.
More than 130 others were hurt in the crash, which was called one of the worst train accidents in the history of California. He was a member of BLET Division 20 in Los Angeles and had been a BLET member for 10 years at the time of the accident.
Accident. Really, accident. As CeeLo Green said, ain't that some shit?
This accident led to the pass of Federal Railroad Administration Emergency Order 26, which banned the use of cellular phones and other electronic devices in the locomotive cab.
How about that? They call it an accident twice. And if you're unfamiliar with the details, you might assume Sanchez was some kind of hero. That his heroic actions somehow led to the passage of safety laws, wouldn't you? But there are no mysteries. Here is the BLET mission statement.
The Brotherhood of Locomotive Engineers and Trainmen exists to promote and protect the rights, interests, and safety of its members through solidarity, aggressive representation, and education.
Yeah. Heavy on the solidarity and aggressive representation. Not so much on the safety and education, it would seem. After the recent derailment in East Palestine, Ohio, we learned that each year in the U.S. there are around 1,000 train derailments. And you always thought train travel was fun and safe. So here's this record of a train wreck from 15 years back in a town few people have ever heard of. And look, look at the fuckery, the bullshit, the distortions, the in-your-face lies. In terms of global offense, that train wreck wasn't even a blip. What must go on with big, big stories that really make history, huh? Pearl Harbor, 9/11, an invasion of Iraq in search of weapons of mass destruction that never existed but were guaranteed to exist by Bush and Powell. A questionable national election. A bunch of innocent people who became insurrectionists and domestic terrorists because they questioned that election. A disastrous withdrawal from Afghanistan, a proxy war with Russia over a country few people could find on a map, a nation with which the U.S. has no treaty agreements, the anointing of an arrogant, creepy, gravel-voiced dancing dwarf to heroic status, a pandemic with vaccines that proved to be neither safe nor effective, injected into the arms of millions by government and corporate coercion. Truth is flatlining. Of course, post-train disaster, there was a flurry of legislation.
Pass a bunch of laws, that'll fix everything.
No cell phones on duty was already a rule at Metrolink Railroad. Sanchez just didn't give a fuck. Besides train engineers, the state of California passed a law against driving an automobile while texting in 2009. If you get caught the first time, it'll cost you a whopping $75. The second offense is really nasty. Ooh, $190. If you drive drunk, it's goodbye license for a minimum of 6 months plus up to $20,000 in fines and legal fees. You can find plenty of sobriety checkpoints around California. You see people pulled over getting roadside drunk tests all the time. Where the fuck is the corresponding enforcement and penalties for texting while driving? Nowhere. Follow the money for answers. Alcohol sales in the U.S. are about $250 billion a year. Telcom? Ha! Well over $1 trillion. Which industry do you think has more lobbying muscle to influence shitbag legislators? But back to me taking my daughter once more to that Chatsworth train station. She was heading north to meet some friends, and for once, for the first time, we weren't pressed for time, and I took a really good look around the place. It has become a shithole. The interior station was closed. No one on duty. Need a bathroom? Hold it. Cup of coffee? Bring your own. A vast homeless encampment alongside the station. Tents, garbage, drug addicts on patrol. California dreams, fueled by methamphetamine. As my daughter hopped aboard that train, I said a silent prayer. First that someone competent was driving it, and then a prayer of thanks that I'm getting the fuck out of California. Hey, thanks for hanging with me once again. It's always great to be with you. Stop by thatlarryshow.com for more content and commentary. There you will find hundreds more episodes. If you like what you just heard, leave a strong 5-star review wherever you download. Then tell a friend, send him a link. If you really like what you heard, help support the show and click the Patreon or PayPal button and make a pledge. Big or small, all donations are gratefully accepted. If you prefer conventional methods, you'll see a P.O. Box address for donations as well. If you want to write, it's thatlarryshow@gmail.com. Follow the show between episodes on Twitter and Facebook. We have a lot of fun there. I'll see you next Wednesday or thereabouts, and until that time, take no shit.